Rocket.
I'm shaking.
The Church of Mavis.
Oh, I'm stoked. I'm ready. This is awesome.
Welcome to the Church of Mavis Radio Show. It's Friday night. It's 7:11 p.m. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. Let me see. I forgot I had a couple of books I had to plug over here. First book is Cold Forged Flame by Marie Brennan. Tor Books. It's a fantasy book. Got a hot chick on it with a sword. Says if you're looking for smart, exciting stories of fantastical adventure, look no further. Marie Brennan will deliver. So that's a fantasy book. I got one more book here I need to plug for Inner Traditions, and I'll be done. Andrew Collins, Atlantis in the Caribbean and the Comet That Changed the World, from Bear & Company, BearandCompanyBooks.com or Inner Traditions. I haven't read the shit because they just sent it, but they wanted him on the show, but I don't have any openings, so I told him I'd plug the book and try to get him on another time. This is another creepy book about this comet thing. I know Graham Hancock released a book about a comet that killed us all back in the day recently, Magicians of the Gods. So now Andrew Collins. So I guess we're going to die by a comet sooner or later. Yay! Something else I want to plug. If you're into horror, Rue Morgue, their Canadian magazine, they just had a 200 Years of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Just got it. I love their magazine. but just got it in the mail today. But it's Rue Morgue. I always have weird stuff happen to me with magazines. I subscribe to them, and they close down. I swear to God. This Rue Morgue's the only one that hasn't done it to me. I subscribed to Fangoria after finally having the money to do it. I used to read Fangoria when I was a kid all the time. Closed down. My money, I don't know where it is. I subscribe to UFO Magazine. Same damn thing. Closed down. Don't know where my money is. Magical Blend. I love that magazine. That closed down. I don't think they stole my money, though. But I have bad luck with magazines. I'm, like, scared to subscribe to a magazine. And funny enough, I subscribed to Skelos Magazine, this, like, Conan weird fiction new thing, kind of in the vein of Weird Tales, and they had a mix-up in the magazine, went to the wrong place, and I'm still trying to get that here, but they're into Robert Howard and Conan and, you know, H.P. Lovecraft and all that stuff, and they may be coming on the show later. They send me my magazine. It looks really good, so I'm hoping it gets here. Plus, it's supposed to have an unpublished Robert Howard story in it. Just got a book of his, too, called Marchers of Valhalla, which is some weird Norse fiction. They say somehow it foreshadows his death, which he eventually shot himself in the head, which that's according to that movie, I think. It's Once Upon a Time or something like that with Renee Zellweger and Vincent D'Onofrio. He plays Robert Howard, and at the end, of course, spoiler alert, he blows his brains out. He does the Hunter S. Thompson dance, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. 26th Annual February 2017 International UFO Congress. That's February 15th through the 19th. February 2017, UFOCongress.com. A couple of other things to mention, and then we're going to get to our guest, Greg Kaminsky, a cult of personality, his radio show. I also added to the title, Greg, we're hermits.
Right?
We're hermits. So why not? Hey. But the other thing is, just to be on the bleaker side, I've always been at had some trouble with KGRA radio. Race Hobbs. I'm not going to get into details because I don't want to get into it heavily, but we hate each other. He's had my ex on the show talking about me being poor in the past and living in a trailer and just balls to the wall of attacking me. This has kind of gone back for a while. But anyway, someone I know, this girl I know, she showed me that somebody that worked there, Bill Fort, a.k.a. William Fort, that he's a child predator. And at first I was like, nah, you know. And I said, before I would release anything like that publicly, I would want to research that and make sure, you know, that that's what this guy is. I don't want to ruin anybody's life or anything like that. I had an ex before try to make up something about me about, I'm not going to go into detail because she's already tried to take me to court for stalking just for talking about it on the show. And, of course, she was laughed out of court after the judge heard it and heard everything. He basically, I won, and she was laughed out of court. But basically, that's old water under the bridge. But this guy, Bill Fort, he apparently raped a 13-year-old and works for KGRA. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, you can find it all over the internet. You just look up William Fort, and there's sites everywhere warning you that this guy is a child predator. And he, where he lives, and if he's in your neighborhood or whatever, it's public knowledge. So I started sharing it everywhere, and they got very upset. Jamie Havokin threatened to beat me up and said they're calling the police on me, which is funny. The only thing I did was share this article. I didn't say anything threatening or anything. Just shared the article, and that's it. So I'm the bad guy now. But anyway, apparently they're running pretty scared about it. And this guy, William Fort, shut down his Facebook page. He took it down. Someone told me today they're not even, you're not even supposed to have a page on Facebook. I don't know if that's a federal law, but if you have a conviction like this, you're not supposed to have a Facebook page. I don't know if that's for every state, but somebody was telling me that. But anyway, the point is, don't pull an ex of mine on your radio show and make fun of me for being poor and being a guy that grew up in the South in Georgia and, you know, a hillbilly or whatever. I've been called a hillbilly vampire. That was always fascinating. And and then have this guy work for you. I'm just calling out the hypocrisy, and that's it. You leave me alone, or I'll dig up some skeletons out of your closet, and you'll all be crying all night, and that's all I'm going to say, and that's what I've done. Leave me alone, and you won't have any trouble. But everyone should know about this guy. It's crazy. I'm afraid this guy's going to show up at my house in a Norman Bates dress. What the? Get some firepower or something. Going to show up. Scary looking dude. Very scary. Like something out of Titanic Sopranos. But anyway, nonetheless, that's the end of that tale. It's been a long week. Jay was going to be on tonight, but I got mad at him because he's come out of the closet as a Trump supporter. So I told him to take the night off. I'm processing because I knew if he came on the show that we would get into it. I don't like Trump. I don't like Trump supporters. I was for Bernie, but it looks like I'm going to hold my nose and follow Bernie's lead and vote for Hillary. I don't like it, but there's a lot of things about life I don't like. You know, I'm a cancer survivor. I had testicular cancer when I was 17. Life throws you lemons, and you make lemonade. Welcome to planet Earth. So I don't want to vote for her. I would have rather voted for Bernie, but I hate Trump. I'm not going to say all of his followers, but a majority of them, I can't stand them. I just got rid of a bunch of weird little Aryan Nation young teenagers that are gay that are voting for Trump. Oh my! And that's what they remind me of, are like little Nazi blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids giggling about Hitler back in World War II, the way they carry on about it. I just don't understand it. I think there's a white nationalist movement intertwined with Trump, and it's the last gasp of air of white people to try to hold on to their power. And I'm a white guy, and I'm just not for it. I'm not going to fall for white is right. And, yeah, I don't like Hillary either on a lot of levels, but I think she's the better choice. And it sucks, but like I said, when life throws you lemons, make lemonade. I would have rather Bernie to have won, that's for sure. That's who I wished. But if you really follow somebody, you follow his lead. You don't turn on him and act like a psycho and call him a coward. Well, during her inauguration, he was crying and had some weird scratch on his face. Well, they might have beat him up for all I know. I don't know. That's some of that right-wing smut, but he was crying. Which he was sad. I think he was authentic and he came from the heart. I just think Trump's like Caligula. That's what Trump reminds me of, is Caligula. I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but I've seen the Penthouse Peter O'Toole version, and it ain't pretty. It ends rather bad. But I think it's going to end bad either way. I think either way we're screwed, but at least I'm not going to go out on the Nazi. The Nazi side. You got to watch out for those Nazis now. Where's the Bear Jew? Some inglorious bastards. But hopefully me and Jay will work this out. But this is a liberal show. So, I mean, that throws me a conundrum putting a Trump supporter right next to me. That's a conundrum for me. I don't know how to process that. It may make me less of a character or whatever because I can't handle it. But right now, I just can't. So for safety reasons, I'm processing, and we'll figure it out later. Well, let me get off my high horse and get here with Sir Hermit, Greg Kaminsky. How's it going, Greg?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm doing all right. I'm not used to doing a show by myself. I think on some level I want to start doing shows by myself. Not completely, but sometimes. I think it'll be good for me on some level because I'm used to always having a co-host. So I've never really swung solo at all.
So well, that's what I do always do, so have no fear.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Tell us a little bit about A Cult of Personality. And at first, did you start out doing it on a regular schedule and then it just kind of evolved to where you're going to just do it whenever you want? How did that work out?
Let's see. A Cult of Personalities, my podcast, acultofpersonality.net is the website. It's been going for like 10 years at least. And let's see, when I began, it was really haphazard, and I didn't really have any set idea of a schedule or an agenda or any idea of where it was going or how long it would go for or anything. And initially, I think I had delusions of doing it like twice a month or even once a week at one point, but then I quickly kind of disabused myself of that notion, and I've kind of settled into like a once a month schedule. And right now, because of my schedule with school and family and everything, once a month is really, really good for me. And in terms of, it also allows me enough time to actually read the book or material that the person I'm interviewing has written, so I can digest it a little bit and actually do the interview with a little bit of awareness about, you know, who they are and what their expertise is. So it helps guide me in doing the questions and all of that. So I'm really interested in esoteric subjects, occultism, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, tarot, alchemy, you know, all these type of things. So, you know, that's basically the gist of it. So,
I can definitely understand what you mean about not having time to read their books and stuff. I know there's been many times I've had to BS through, and I flip through the book real fast and get keywords and look at chapters and stuff, but sometimes I just don't have time to read some of these books. Like, I have so many books right now, I could probably build a house out of books outside if I wanted to, a mansion.
Mm.
I have so many books.
Yeah, I ran out of shelf space long ago, so there's just books everywhere, so I know what you mean.
That's how it is with me. It's like Harry Potter's bedchamber.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely read the books of the people I interview. But in terms of how close a read it is, you know, it varies, I guess, depending on the material and the length of the material and my familiarity with it. So.
Yeah, I do a lot of them, but there's a lot I don't. So it's kind of a half and half kind of thing. Sometime lately, for some reason, I have trouble. I used to read all the time, but there's like, I don't know what's happened. It's like something's happened to where I'm not reading as much, and I'm trying to get back to where I was. I don't know what's happened exactly, but there's been something that's made me read a lot less lately, and I'm trying to get back into the groove because I love reading. I've read a lot of books over the years, and like I said, I have so many, but the last year or so, something's clicked where I'm not doing it as much. I'm not sure what that is. I'm de-evolving.
So you got to switch it up, change your routine.
Definitely. Just had Artie Six Killer Clark on. I'm reading her book now. She does those the Native American Star People stories. Man, those will trip you out.
Yeah, for sure.
Those are really, really good. She was just on telling us stories, and there's nothing better than that. She's been on twice, and I've written interviewed her once, but just breaking down. She just travels all over North America and South America and gathers these stories, and if you haven't had a chance, check them out. They will trip you out. That's not woo-woo stuff. It's like, for some reason, American Indians, she has American Indians in her book. I have to correct myself because I'll say Native American. But I just don't see them as people that would make it up. I mean, maybe someone would, but I just think they're authentic and truthful, and those stories will, some of them are freak you out. There's some wild ones in there for sure. There was one about these aliens came down at this guy's farm and was stealing the daughter and taking her and doing weird stuff, and she was pregnant and the baby went missing, and then they moved finally from the ranch. They moved to another ranch out of fear because this was going on. So some guy came there one night. I forget who the guy was, but one of the American Indians, and he saw them come down in their true form. He said they were kind of fish-like, and they shape-shifted into humans and were walking around, and they took the 57 Chevy out and started playing with it and driving around in it. That was one of the stories. I don't know if you can make that up. I guess you could, but I don't think they were. They seem pretty authentic to me. And then she has got a book, Sky People, which is South American stories about, UFO stuff. And they talk about big blue giants coming out of the sky and taking women villagers, and you never see the woman again. So that's pretty freaky for sure.
Certainly is.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy. But as far as your spirituality, what would you call yourself? I mean, what branch? You in a bunch of different branches, or what would you consider yourself?
I don't know. I think, that's a difficult question because, I think any kind of definition is, limiting. And what we are is not so easily contained or classified. So I generally don't like to put myself in a box because I even feel like, in a sense, to be a person even is to be asleep in a lot of ways. So, even to that idea that, you're not just the body, or you're not just a mind in a body or connected to a body or any of these things. So I guess my definition would be one where I try not to define what I am or anything in terms of labels or things. But I'm interested very much in Kabbalah, the Jewish esotericism, eventually sort of Christianized during the Renaissance. Okay. I'm also interested a lot in Freemasonry because it's a very universal set of symbols that, you know, anybody who considers themselves sort of a seeker in the mysteries can certainly identify with, regardless of what your particular religion may be or not. And I'm also interested in Thelema and scientific illuminism, which is more Western magic and mysticism. But my primary interest is really revolves around Kabbalah and what I would call like inner alchemy, which is like meditation and contemplation, and it's just kind of like a mystical practice. So that's probably as best I could describe it. I mean, I've given presentations on this concept of inner alchemy and how you can begin to practice it and what it involves, but it's basically what I would consider like a primordial tradition of like bodily gnosis that exists in almost every culture throughout the world in some form or another, or at least used to.
I gotcha. Definitely fascinating for sure. Mine's more like I was born in Georgia and my dad was a Baptist preacher, so I was raised in Christianity, but for some reason he didn't really try to shovel it down our throats, maybe a little bit, but he backslid and didn't really do it so much. And then my whole thing has been trying to break away from Christianity. It's like I have on many levels, but on some levels it seems like it's always there, like you can't get rid of it. Like I'm real big into shamanism, and I've had shamans on from all over the world, from, you know, Siberian shamanism to Norse shamanism to American Indian shamanism. I really resonate with that a lot. But on many levels, I still, it's like I'm always, it's like Christianity's like a dog trying to chew on my foot when I'm trying to walk around the block and I'm trying to kick it away. It won't go away.
Maybe well,
it's just ramming. I don't know.
No, I think it's valid because, you know, it's what you were born into, right? And it's a tradition you were raised in. So it would be, I think, not unusual that you would need to kind of embrace it on some level and maybe even like master its lessons or esoteric symbolism in order to really move, I wouldn't say beyond it or away from it, but just to be able to experience other faith traditions in different ways. But you're always going to kind of see it through the lens of Christianity, you know? That's just your lot in life.
And I've had a weird experience with Christianity. Well, first off, after my dad died in my early 20s, me and a friend saw a person made out of light standing on the cloud tops, and we had been partying, and we were driving down a dirt road, and it kind of did its finger at us like, no, 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 naughty, naughty. And we both saw it. And it was just standing on the clouds, like a person made out of light, standing on the clouds, acknowledging us, and we saw it, and both of us were like, do you see that? Yes. Do you see that? Yes. And I always thought maybe it was my dad. I don't know what it was. But a few years ago, I had been feeling kind of negative, and I put a CD on, or a DVD with the Bible on, that was playing it loud in the house just to say, all right, if there's anything here bothering me, I got kind of paranoid, you know, superstitious, and put it on, you know, maybe it'll get rid of it or whatever. And I have felt more positive when I've listened to some of it, even though I think some of it's crazy and there's a lot of hypocrisy in it. There's some good stuff in there, too. But something told me to go outside. So I went outside, looked up, two beings of light leaving my house. Flying out of, they just popped, it's like they just popped out of the roof and flew towards the heavens. Two people made out of light, completely sober, and just saw them But like Superman and Superwoman, like they were leaving my house. And I maybe when I was listening to that Bible, something up there came down that was good. I don't think there were anything bad, but I just know I saw it, and I'll never forget it ever. And I believe that's what we are. We're beings of light, and I'm just seeing people without their bodies, flesh on it. That's what I think now.
Those are amazing experiences, though, for sure. And to see it, have it, you know, see it more than once.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to. You should keep your eyes open.
Seen them about three times. Well, more than that. I've had weird experiences where I've woke up in the middle of the night and gone on the back porch and look up in the heavens and I see them all around the planet everywhere. It's almost like there's a quantum realm around the Earth, and that's where they are. And I think when we die, we pop into that quantum realm, and I guess maybe they usher us off to somewhere else. That's kind of what I think. I'm still processing it, really, but. I always bring up those Ron Howard movies, Cocoon 1 and 2. Those are my go-to death philosophy movies. You've seen those, I'm sure, with Steve Guttenberg.
Mm-hmm.
the little old people in the cocoons in the swimming pool. And then
you're
the
taking
lights.
Me way back, man.
Those are my. I think Opie did some LSD for those. For sure. But lately, I'm feeling weird stuff with this Norse. Stuff. Like, I'm not an expert on it, but I love, like, I just got this very unique tarot deck that came out back in the 80s, and it was like a collector's item and over $100 on eBay, and I couldn't afford it, but I was doing a search, and I found the guy, he on Etsy, he's selling them, and it's called the Norse Tarot, Clive Barrett, and I bought them for like $40 from the United Kingdom, and it's a brand new deck, and he made a little condensed book. And it's basically like the only Norse tarot that I know that exists. And I just found that recently and got it in the mail. It's pretty cool. I haven't even opened them yet, but I feel like I'm resonating with the Norse stuff a whole lot lately. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, well, it seems like a lot of people are. I don't know why either, but definitely seems like a lot of people seem to be experiencing that. I don't know if you've noticed that too, but...
Yeah, I have, and... I know I've put up some articles that they're having like a renaissance, you know, I guess, where is it, Iceland and all that stuff, or Sweden or wherever, they're like rebuilding the temples and all that stuff, that's where
yeah.
It's right, yeah.
I think
they're
it is Iceland.
A renaissance over there with all this, so, but I've always been into them, but I'll admit, which sounds kind of lame, that Viking show kind of did it a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's a great show, I mean, you got to give it up for that one, I mean.
I've always watched
it. It's a good TV show for sure. But
I like Loki. He's like a little trickster Loki.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a book here, The Norse Shaman by Evelyn Rysdick. I'm about to read that next. It seems pretty interesting for sure.
Well, have you read anything or talked to Freya Aswin?
Freya who?
Freya Aswin. I've interviewed her few years ago now. It was probably one of the most intense interviews I ever did. She's she works with Odin, and she's a pretty intense person generally. She's a musician and artist, and she's written on the Norse mysteries, and she's probably like one of the people I think of first when you talk about this subject, because I'll never forget after I had interviewed her and I put the interview online, and where I work, I was like all alone in the building, and all of a sudden this crow just came and started hanging out by the front door. And he just wouldn't leave. He just kept hanging out. And so I walked over, and I noticed he had one eye. And that kind of blew me away a little bit. So I felt like there was definitely a connection there. So I feel like Freya Aswin is definitely plugged into the Norse mysteries. And
pretty
and
cool. How do you spell her last name? I'm pretty sure I got the first one right, but...
Aswynn.
Okay. I know there was that link I showed you earlier. Somebody told me about that lady. What was her name? I can't remember. I'll have to open this article again to see. But
yeah.
She has a real big, expensive book on Amazon. It's like $50. It seems pretty interesting. I might buy one year.
Yeah, my friend Jeff Wolf did that interview for Secret Transmissions. Yeah, that was
right.
A good interview.
I got to read it all. I've only skimmed through it. But her name's Maria K-V-I-L-H-A-U-G.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's where all this resonates from. I mean, is it Iceland, Scandinavian? That's considered Iceland. I'm still learning about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I saw, like, Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, you know, all those countries. But, you know, primarily I think it was centered, like, a lot around Denmark and Sweden.
I may, if they make me come back here next life, I might have to incarnate into this Iceland situation.
Yeah, it seems like they got a good thing going on there at the moment.
I'm digging these blonde, blue-haired chicks, too. That's the other bad thing, though. Hitler kind of gave this stuff a bad rap on some level, though, if you look at it in that way. Isn't it like Aryans and stuff, like, real big into this stuff, like, hardcore? Not saying that makes it bad, but you know what I mean. Like, they're into this stuff hardcore, ain't they, a lot of them?
I would say it seems that there probably is a faction or percentage of people that are into this stuff who are also into that stuff as well. I'm not sure exactly of the crossover, but there seems to be some potential for some crossover.
I'm sure
there.
There's a lot that aren't, and then there are some that definitely are. But,
you know, I think a lot of it has to do with this idea of identity, you know, because I think nowadays, and more and more as we go on in modern times, it seems like people are less connected to traditional, like, concepts or institutions, family, religion, you know, all these type of things are much more decrepit than they used to be. And so there's a big pushback in, like, in terms of individuals' identity. And you see this all over the place. It's ridiculous in a lot of ways. But in that sense, I think you have, like, people who identify, you know, as white or as certain ethnic heritage. So naturally, they may want to kind of look to the past and see, well, like, what do my ancestors, you know, have, how would they have worshipped before, you know, Christianity? So, and I think there's a lot of thought about, you know, Christianity itself is kind of like corrupt in a lot of ways. So it's easy to see neo-paganism as like much more pure because, you know, they haven't killed anybody, they haven't started any wars, you know, all that stuff, which is invalid in a lot of ways too. But so I don't know. But again, it goes back to my idea, like, for me personally, like, these ideas of identity are also, like, not something that I personally like to start to indulge in because, as I said before, for me, like, to be a person is to be asleep. So to delve down even further down that road, you know, start defining what kind of person you are, that's not the direction I want to go in myself.
So what do you mean by that? We're kind of like spirits that got trapped in flesh pockets?
Well, I mean, most of us were constantly just walking around with, you know, we feel like we're awake, but we're really not awake fully. Like, you're talking about seeing light beings, right?
Yeah.
So something of that nature might clue us in to how we could potentially be more aware of what's going on around us. That's just one example. There's many more. But the whole concept of, like, what, you know, as individuals we truly are at the core of our being, we're only able to discover that when we can, like, shut out all the rest of the bullshit. including our own thoughts, because most of our thoughts are just thoughts, and they're not really anything more than that if we don't let them, you know, influence us.
So what do you think we are when we're not here? Do you think that's what we are, kind of our energy beings of some sort, and that's what we are before we came here, and that's what we are when we leave here, when we die?
Well, this gets, you know, more esoteric, if, like going down this road. So my conception, my view is that there, you know, this idea of you and I as individuals is like a fractalization, like that we perceive, but the reality is that there's only unity or no thing, or Ein Sof, as the Kabbalists would call it, and that's all that is. And it's basically, that's, you know, what is, not us, in a sense. So if at our core, if we can like trace back consciousness and kind of like go behind it, if we're fortunate enough or work hard enough to get there, we can discover that that's what is us, I would say. We're not that. It is us.
Definitely. I've always said we're light, glowy aliens. Light, glowy aliens. And what I'm trying to figure out is the force that we come here. Is it kind of like a tadpole would be forced to come here, like, was, you know, in line with Mother Nature? Is that do we have a choice in this? I don't think we have a choice. I think it just makes us. And I hope I'm wrong, because there's a part of me that, you know, doesn't want to come back here. It seems like a horror show here.
Well, I don't know. See, in my conception of it, it's like nothing's gone anywhere. Nothing's, you know what I mean? Like nothing's come down, and nothing has to go back up. So it just is what it is. And
okay, so
our perception
of it
is what
makes
it. Okay, so
let's talk a little bit more about the Hillary problem.
You know,
why?
I think. And our... it's really like that pursuit of pleasure and the running away from the pain, that kind of hamster wheel effect.
Definitely. You started talking about the pleasure. I just watched Hellraiser recently. You're going to be a Pinhead flashback.
Yeah.
Welcome to Oblivion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Man, I hadn't seen those in a while, and I watched them recently. That's crazy.
Yeah, those were intense.
Those are something else.
Especially, I love that idea of the cube. I mean, that is phenomenal. Esoteric symbolism there.
Yeah, I love it. I just watched the first and second one and was definitely blown away. He just had a new book come out with Scarlet Gospels. I haven't read it yet, but I have it. It's supposed to be more stories about Pinhead and everything. But another thing that I've had happen along with the light beings is I haven't lately, but I've had a lot of UFO stuff happen. There was a point to where everywhere I moved, UFO sightings would happen over my house, and with multiple witnesses to points. I mean, there were points where friends would look at me and say, "Jeffrey, you're attracting these here." And there were points I went through agoraphobia. I'm still kind of agoraphobic. I don't think I'm like, you know, agoraphobic, like a movie or like you'd see in the movies, but there's stages of it.
Right.
I like to know that I'm going, so I don't like surprises when it comes to, you know, let's go somewhere. I got to kind of plan it out in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I mean, I've seen so many UFOs over my house at treetop level that, I mean, there are points to where I was like, am I a freaking alien? What the hell is going on? It sounds silly to say, but, I mean, I've really gone through those thought processes to where I'm like, what in the hell is going on?
Yeah, I can kind of identify. I've only had it happen once, but it was like a treetop level, and I did have all the same kind of thoughts that you just described.
Interesting, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm still, you know, there's some weird things that have happened with the UFO sightings that correlate with the radio show. there, when I first started doing this, I was having a lot of trouble getting interviews. I couldn't get interviews with anybody. They ignored me. And then I had this weird UFO sighting of these, like, flaming, I call them fireflies. It was like four or five of them in the heavens. And that's what they, like, glowing, fiery flames that were red. And it was like five of them. It was unlike anything I've ever seen. And I screamed like a girl for my brother and nephew to come out. And they saw them, too. And it was almost like whatever it was saw us, too. But shortly after that, I started getting interviews with people that I never thought would have the time of day with me. I was hanging out on the phone with Stanton Friedman for hours. Nick Pope, Lloyd Pye, he's passed away now. He used to live in, not too far from here. But all kinds of people who, you know, I saw in documentaries, you know. I didn't think they would, you know, they started paying attention to me. It was almost like the sighting was correlating on some level with that and helping me to get the interview. So I thought on some level the show was about raising awareness, and there were positive ones, and who knows, I mean, there could be bad ones too. I believe that there's some that have, you know, don't have our best intentions at heart, but on some level I've kind of interlocked it to where maybe I had the experiences because they knew that it would lead to this and, you know, make raise consciousness or some kind of connection like that on some level. But what,
yeah,
kind of, what did your the craft look like that you saw?
Well, the one I saw was a huge black triangle, and it had a lot of what I would describe as like a circuit board pattern on the bottom, where like it looked like laser lights were like kind of like moving around on the bottom. It was like, you know, kind of something out of like Tron. It appeared like out of nowhere, and it was massive, massive. I mean, it looked like a freaking like aircraft carrier, huge. And it just sat in the sky and made no noise at all. That's, I was shocked, and I couldn't even, I think I was like paralyzed. I couldn't move when I saw it. It was nighttime. It was a clear night. And it just materialized above us. And then I was like looking at it, staring at it with my mouth hanging open. I couldn't move or talk. And then the next thing I know, it was gone. And I looked over my shoulder, and it's like streaking at the horizon, like at the speed of light, this blue streak. And I turned to the girl who was with me, and I said, "What was that?" And she looked at me and like, she said, "What was what?" And I didn't know what to say at that point. And then we went inside the dorm, because I was at college when this happened. And, like, it was hundreds of people lived there, but all for whatever reason, nobody was around. The place was completely deserted. And I remember falling asleep, like, having all those same thoughts. Like, what the hell was that? What did I see? It looked like something made out of metal or with, you know, lights and whatever, but it didn't behave like anything that was solid, you know what I mean? And and what you described too, with like the way the encounter kind of like is interacting or reflective with like what's going on in your life or your consciousness or both, because they're not separate anyway. It seems very connected to that. And the other thing that was really weird about it is after I saw it, it was like it was wiped from my memory until, you know, like, I don't know, it was more than 15 years after the fact, and finally it like came flooding back into my head. And I don't know why it was suppressed, if that was like me or something else, I don't know. But it was a very intense experience, for sure.
I've seen similar things like this with my mother one time, and they were coming out of a hole in the sky. It was like a weird, it was almost like a greenish, orangish cloud weirdness in a hole, and these things, three of them or so, came out. My mother saw them with me, and she goes, "Oh, my God, Jeffrey."
And it was like she was terrified, and she was holding on to my arm, and she doesn't like to talk about it to this day, but she remembers it, but she don't like to talk about it. But it was almost exactly what you described with the triangle craft, but they were coming out of a hole in the sky, like they were coming from somewhere else. And she saw them with me. My mom's not into any of this stuff. She doesn't. She's not into any, none of this stuff. And she saw them. But the other thing you said that was interesting, you said the girl didn't see it. I've had experiences like that where I see something and there's someone standing right next to me and they don't see a dang thing. It was her. Like,
yeah.
They're not, the consciousness is not high enough to see it or something weird. I don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know. It freaked me out that she didn't see it because it was so in our face, you know. It was impossible not to see it. At least that's how it seemed to me.
I've had that same experience. There was this African-American guy I knew, and I was seeing something, and he was like, I just don't see it. And I felt like a nut because he couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking and looking and looking, and there it was. And it was like he just couldn't see it, but I could. And it was the weirdest thing. And it just made me think, am I nuts? Why can't he see it when it's right there? But, yeah, I've had that happen. It's definitely awkward. But and then the other thing you got to worry about, have you been zapped up and probed and put back down and you just don't remember? That's what I think, too, about a lot of this stuff. I've seen them over my house treetop. If they've taken me, I don't remember a damn thing. Now, one time I had some experiences with DMT a long, 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 long time ago, and I had some weird, like, memories where I felt like I was on a table when those grays were around me, but I didn't know if it was something that really happened to me or just something, you know, in my brain or my imagination. It was just like a memory, so I don't really know for sure if that happened to me, but that got brought up. But I've always wondered, are they taking me and I just don't even know it? And then, you know, they say males don't remember it as much as females for some reason in a lot of cases. But I've always wondered that. Are they zapping me up and, you know, doing stuff to me, and then they throw me back down here, and I just don't remember a dang thing. I remember seeing the craft, but I don't ever remember hanging out with beings and, you know, the probe table or anything like that. I don't. If they did it, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, I kind of, I admit I've definitely wondered that myself. Had strange scars that I don't, you know, where I got. But yeah, I guess the only thing I could say is, you know, here we are. We had strange experiences, and we're both doing radio shows, interviewing people about these subjects, and must be significant.
Yeah, I think on some level when we sleep, we leave our bodies too, and they might work with us then on some level, you know. I mean, I believe that too, or we go somewhere else for sure.
Well, I mean, dreams, I mean, you can, if you want to be reductionist about it, you know, and say it's just, you know, something going on in your head while you sleep, that's fine, but as far as I'm concerned, the dream world is just as real, or in some cases it seems more real than this one. I don't know. I mean, I can't be the only person who's experienced that. I'm not saying every time I dream it's like that, but certain dreams are, like, incredibly vivid and certainly significant, and I definitely feel like, you know, what I am is, you know, somewhere else, and not, and it also feels like a familiar place often.
Definitely. My experience is, like I said, I've woke up in the middle of the night and looked outside, and I see clusters of weird lights. They're not stars, but it's like those light people in clusters all around each other, around the freaking heavens. And I think that's where we, I don't know for sure, but I think that's where we eject when we sleep, and when we die, we eject there too, and then they usher us off to somewhere else, or I don't know, but I've had a weird experience where all those things are, like, around the planet, and I have come across some weird light worker woo-woo stuff where they talk about that stuff, and I used to, like, laugh at it, but now I don't laugh at it so much.
Yeah, a lot of the ancient mysteries would talk about the idea that when people die, their souls go to the moon and then they get recycled back, you know, to be reincarnated. But if they're, you know, if they become, you know, enlightened or whatever, then their souls go to the sun and they don't come back.
Wow. That's pretty interesting for sure. The sun,
yeah.
I've always thought weird stuff with the sun. Well, hey, Joe's making us go on break, so we'll have to pick up about the sun when we come back, because I've had some weird experiences with me and the sun to where it's like very bizarro. All right, everybody, we got Greg Kaminsky here with us, and what's your website again, Greg?
It's occultofpersonality.net, or you can just Google Occult of Personality, and you'll find it.
All right, everybody, you're listening to the Church of Mavis Radio Show, United Public Radio, 107.7, New Orleans. We'll be back in about 8 minutes.
Oh, oh, oh. Everybody was kung fu fighting.
New show, Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond. Thursday night, 8 p.m.
See you Thursday, everyone.
Hi, I'm Joe Montaldo, and you're listening to United Public Radio. You want to learn about aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs, visitations, military abductions? Join Joe Montaldo on Wednesday night, 8 to 10 p.m. for his episodes of UFO Undercover. Come check out Christina George's new show, Paranormal Connections, only on United Public Radio, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. See you Monday. Hello, you're listening to United Public Radio. I'm Joe Montaldo, host of News on the Flip Side. Check us out every Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Central Time.
United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. we're back with Greg Kaminsky, and we're going to talk about the sun there. I've had some weird experiences with the sun to where it's like it's almost, not almost, it's like connected on a big, weird level to where it's almost like an immersion of, like I can go outside or at a window and just close my eyes, and the white light will fill the room on such a level it's almost bizarre. I feel like Superman or something. I've had some weird, weird sun experiences to where it's almost like it's interacting with me and it knows it. Or my, well, I guess the energy part of me is interacting with it too, the light being or whatever.
But well, I mean, it's the same energy. All the energy in you in the and the energy of the sun, it all comes from the sun, you know. So,
yeah.
And I think we can, there are processes that we can use, practices that allow us to, our bodies to kind of better gather and store that energy, and it can be transformative in a lot of ways, you know. And that, again, that kind of goes back to what I said, like, to be a person is to be asleep, you know, because if you use these practices and do them faithfully, it eventually inevitably leads to a more wakeful state.
So what were you talking about it being a where we go when we die? Because I've always wondered if it's a doorway or something weird.
Well, they say this is ancient mysteries, and you have to keep in mind, like, we're not initiates of these mystery schools that existed hundreds or thousands of years ago. And so what we're getting is, like, hearsay, and we don't know if it's literal or symbolic or both. So, you know, buyer beware. When I tell you these things, you know, I'm not telling you how to interpret them. It could be purely symbolic, you know. It could be literal. And on some level, you know, that what we're talking about, the literal and the symbolic may kind of break down. So there, those polarities disappear, and it's just what it is. You know, I think once we get into these realms of, like, what happens to the energy that animates the body after the body dies, you know, because clearly that energy existed before and it exists after. So, and I get this isn't one of those reasons why a lot of mystics and things will say, you know, this idea that you're not the body, you know, you're not, you were never really, what you are was never born, so it can't die. And I think this is what they're alluding to. And the idea of going, that your soul going to the sun, if you've achieved this state of enlightenment, I think is generally symbolic, because you're magnetizing your body with solar energy such to the point where you're, you know, the capacity to deal with the energy, you know, see more, like, phenomenon like you're talking about, to be able to do things that may be perceived as, you know, magical powers or something, psychic abilities, you know, all that stuff generally falls into this realm. So the idea of enlightenment and the sun being connected seems natural, and that you wouldn't reincarnate once you'd achieved this state, I think would also seem logically consistent, because if that's what we're here to do, and then you do it, why would you need to come back?
Definitely. I've read some stories where there's, like, sun gods. Like, there's one in Arthurian. There's one in, like, everything, isn't there?
Everything, yeah.
Who's the Norse one? Is there one in Norse?
I'm not as familiar with the Norse pantheon, but I would imagine there is, you know, deities connected with the sun or with nature and the seasons, you know, which are often solar as well. I'm more familiar with the Celtic pantheon in that respect, so, like, you know, Lu or,
That's the one I was going to say, but I couldn't remember. I was having trouble saying the name. It's like Lugh or something.
It's spelled like L-U-G-H, but I think it's pronounced Lugh. But I'm not an expert for sure.
I have some Druid cards with those on it, with him on it.
Yeah, so he's connected with the sun in that pantheon, but you know, you have every religious mythology has various aspects, you know, that are connected with the sun, and Christianity is probably one of the biggest ones. I mean, you know, the whole idea of the Christ is so connected with sun symbolism that it's, you know, it's hard to miss.
I know something I want to ask you about. It's a little weird, but there was some book by D.J. Conway called Lord and Light, Lord of Light and Shadow or something. I read it a long time ago in my early 20s. But there was a story in it about the sacrificial savior or something where this king-like figure was put through some ritual and they took one of his testicles.
That sounds like a whole bunch of stuff getting conflated into one story.
Is there weird stuff? Because when I was 17, I lost one in the war because I had testicular cancer. And I've always heard the weird stuff about Hitler and all that weird stuff. Is there some kind of weird thing going on with that and esoteric stuff? Like, what do you know about that? What are the other...
So there's definitely some symbolic and mythological things that kind of wrapped up in there. So I'm going to try to, like, deconstruct it as best I can, and if I lose a thread, I might ask you to remind me where I'm going. So,
my friends call me Meatball.
I'm glad you can laugh about it. It's a good sign.
You got it, man. Let me tell you. go ahead.
So, first of all, the idea of killing the king. That's an idea from in modern times, from the Golden Bough, Fraser's book, where there was this idea that once the king started to age, that he had to be replaced. So they would sacrifice him, and in order that they would have favor with the gods. And or, you know, there would be some sort of combat situation or what have you that he would be done in. But then that's also connected with this idea of, like, the hanged man, which is, you know, connected with Odin on the Yggdrasil tree, or Christ on the cross, or the hanged man in the tarot, which is this idea that... basically, how would you describe it? Like, you have to sacrifice the lesser self in order that the greater can be reborn, if you will. This is the same idea in alchemy, right? Like, in order to purify something, to raise it to a higher state of being, but by doing that, the lesser part of it has to die off. So this is the idea of the hanged man. And it also involves seeing the world basically upside down. You know, everything seems upside down. Or, you know, this is the idea, as we become more aware, the world seems more and more insane. I think many people can identify with that concept. And then you have this idea of the wounded king. And this, I think, is from, like, the Arthurian tales and the Grail legends. The Fisher King, right, where he's wounded in the thigh, they say. And I think this kind of alludes to what you're talking about, like some sort of sexual injury or some sort of, like, allusion, I think, if you can stretch the analogy to... the sacred feminine, because the wound in the thigh is actually kind of a reference to vagina, essentially, and this idea of the vesica and the goddess in a hidden way to kind of allude to the goddess in this tradition as well. But the whole idea of that was, you know, you heal the king and you heal the land.
I love that. You know, that Terry Gilliam movie, that's one of my favorite movies ever, Robin Williams and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good stuff. I mean, and it's those all those things can be kind of connected in the symbolism and the way that and what they're kind of alluding to.
What was the story with Hitler? Did he really lose one? And what was the story behind that? There's truth
to
it.
I don't have any idea about that.
They used to sing songs about it. I always heard. It's kind of creepy. It creeps me out. I'll have to Google that real quick. Hitler.
Yeah.
I know I always read they used to sing a song about it or something. Hitler really did have only one testicle, German researcher claims. The Guardian. Here's one. Adolf Hitler had a micropenis as well as just one testicle. The Mirror. There's something about it. There's a lot of articles on it. There's even a Huffington Post article on Hitler having one testicle. To get into that later. I'm not going to read them now. But wow, that's a thing apparently, for sure. I knew I'd heard it, but I didn't know there was like a Huffington Post article on it.
Seems to be no end with the fascination with it.
Yeah. He's creepy as hell, but there's some interesting things about him, for sure. I just don't get the whole Jew thing. That's where I draw the line, the kill Jews. But the cult aspect, I mean, that's the problem with a lot of the cult stuff. You don't know what's true or not. Some of it's so outlandish. I mean, you just don't even know what's real and what's not anymore. But, oh, have you had Peter Lavinda on your show?
No, I have not.
I'm surprised. He's been on mine. He was on for The Dark Lord, which is some weird book about the Necronomicon. I've read it. Most of it.
Yeah, I think I had invited him on years ago, but he probably didn't know who I was at that point.
Well, what's strange is he skirts around if he was the Simon Collective, and I didn't ask him because I was like afraid he'd get mad, but I mean, everybody thinks he was part of that Simon Collective that did that paperback Necronomicon. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it was a collective. I just think it was him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But, I mean, he
is that controversial? I mean, I thought that was pretty much common knowledge.
I don't think he don't admit it.
I know he doesn't admit it, but, you know. There's a mythology around the whole thing. That's part of the mystique of it, is like, you know, the person that wrote it is mysterious and, you know, can never be contacted, so. But I think that's not unusual in occult realms. I mean, to have a mythology around the book or its reception, you know what I mean? Those are very standard type of things. You find it in Theosophy and Golden Dawn and Thelema. It's not unusual.
At one point, I fooled around with acid in that book, and let me tell you, I don't think that book's fiction. I mean, there may be some parts of it that are, but there's some weird stuff in there, and I was foolishly messing around with it, and I had some wild experiences. At one point, I saw some reptilian-like beings that were like holograms, and they looked like Mayan gods. That's the closest I've ever seen of them ever, with like weird Mayan god pictures or something, but I don't know what it is with that book, but there's some weird stuff in there. What do you think about it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I think about it, to be honest. I don't really think about it much. I guess one thing that comes to mind, and, you know, I reserve the right to be wrong, is it makes me think that, you know, this is a good example of why something like chaos magic could be effective, because you don't necessarily need something that's quote authentic unquote or ancient to actually have the type of experiences that you're talking about. It can be, you know, it can be brought about using something that is inspired but not really, you know, from ancient Babylon necessarily. So I think that also kind of indicates to me the power of, whether you want to call it our minds or whatever you want to term it, you know, I think it goes to the power of our minds, to affect our very being and, you know, the world around us in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I just had a Gordon White on, and I don't know a lot about chaos magic, but he was schooling me for sure. I'm kind of learning about it. I don't know a lot about it, but definitely interesting. And he's the way to go for sure with it, right?
What's that?
Gordon White. I had him on about chaos magic, and I was just saying that I don't know a lot about it, but he was schooling me on it.
Yeah, he's excellent writer and definitely a very interesting person. So I've had him on my show a couple times as well.
Well, what is it with chaos magic? It doesn't seem like, would you use it for a positive goal? Like I would think if it's chaos magic, it always ends in some weird way that you may not want it to on some level.
No, I think the chaos is more goes to like the idea of chaos theory, which is like a mathematical idea about entropy, but my takeaway from it is a lot more about the fact that it's eminently practical, I guess you could say, and it's not concerned with having all of the, you know, the ancient lineage or the proper mythology or having the right book or all the right tools properly made and consecrated and all of this stuff in order to do magic, because it kind of approaches magic as it deconstructs it, I guess would be the way I would describe it. It deconstructs it and then puts it back together with just elements that it sees as absolutely necessary, which would be the, you know, number one belief of the magician that what they're doing is going to work. And it's based on something valid, you know, some sort of actual philosophical magical theory that has been proven in the past. And, you know, from there you can kind of adapt it as you see fit. You know, but I think one thing I think that's important to keep in mind is no one's going to be a master of any form of magic that they just kind of approach haphazardly in a chaotic fashion, as the name might imply to some. So I think it's still important to approach it methodically. And if you've actually mastered some form of magic already, you're going to have probably much greater success with this form of magic. Just my opinion. But, you know, a lot of it is based around training your mind about how it functions and what's supposed to work. You know, in order to deconstruct it, it's good to have, like, the proper understanding of it before you do so. And I think certainly Gordon approaches it a lot like that, because certainly in his books he's referring to the Greek magical papyrus, which, you know, that's the basis for, you know, Western magic. And you can't get more authentic or ancient than that. But, again, he's adapting it to other intentions and in other formats. So I think a lot of it is really looking at the sort of the way you're employing it, the mindset of how you're putting things together or taking them apart.
How does the trickster fit into chaos magic? I've always had kind of an affinity for the trickster and Coyote and Loki. Is that energy? Is that what chaos magic, the chaos is pretty much? Is that trickster energy? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, I think you could interpret it that way. I mean, on one level, you could say all magic, whether chaos magic or, you know, any sort of ceremonial magic is connected to that, because the patron saint of magic is Hermes Trismegistus. And I think I'm not trying to equate the two, but in a comparative sense, you know, many attributes of Loki could be kind of seen as similar to attributes of Hermes or Mercury. And, you know, I'm not saying that, that the trickster is the god of magic in the Norse pantheon, but it seems like Hermes is, if you had to pick a trickster in the Greek or Roman pantheon, I think, you know, Hermes is probably the one. So he certainly seems to have that character in a lot of ways, in my experience.
What is his story, so to speak? Does he usher in some kind of weird Ragnarok or something? I mean, what's the story? He was like a real, real dude, wasn't he?
Hermes Trismegistus?
Yeah, what's the... Well, he was like an actual person, not just like a mythological made-up one, right?
No, not to my knowledge. As far as I know, he was a deity, so it's not an actual person. Although many actual people have written texts and ascribed Hermes' name to their writings. But...
is he Greek?
Yeah, he was Greek, so as far as I'm aware...
I remember kicking his ass in God of War.
Yeah, so he's a Greek deity, but the Hermes Trismegistus is more the magical, you know, Renaissance deity, the thrice greatest Hermes, sort of looking back to classical times, and the patron saint of magic, and that's why they call it Hermetics. You know, the Corpus Hermeticum, again, writings attributed to Hermes, and Hermes plays, you know, playing a part in these texts as a deity, as the universal mind.
Some book that something to do with him and ancient Egyptian stuff or something. I'd have to dig it up. I can't remember what it's called, but
Yeah, in ancient Egypt they knew him as Thoth.
Okay. Yeah. Something like, sure.
So Thoth the Egyptian. He was the ibis-headed god and the one with the tablet and the pen, or the scribe. He taught writing, architecture, magic, of course. Yeah, but he's definitely considered like a teacher, an instructor.
Oh, coyote. I have this weird chant that I do of coyote. It's from some DJ Conway book, but I made a mistake of doing it too much, and I caused a lot of trouble, and sometimes I still do it. It's like my little superhero chant. It's supposed to call coyote, and I do it like an idiot too many times. But I actually had two Native American Indian women make this shawl of coyote for me from two different tribes that have been on the show. It's pretty cool. It's hanging right here. It's got coyote on it, painted. He's got four legs like a coyote and has all these weird colors all over him. But I do have a weird, and I have these medicine shields on my wall with coyote. I love those stories. Those, you know, those folklore stories, I collect all those.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are pretty crazy.
So what is coyote? Is he the guide of the underworld?
These stories are just weird. They're like coyote bangs beaver woman and she cuts his anus off and throws it in the briars or something. Like, they're weird. He's just the trickster god of the American Indians, and all the stories are these weird like animal folklore stories that are just weird. Like, they get weird. There's one where he hangs out with Bigfoot, and they get into it. Hairy man and coyote. Like, there's like a Sasquatch. The Sasquatch is hairy man, and coyote. There's a whole story. But you can find those pretty cheap. They're pretty interesting. If you've never read them, you should check them out. They're definitely some of them make your jaw drop. You're like, what? Like, some of them are very sexual and they're weird. He loses his member.
Like Osiris.
Yeah, like that definitely. But yeah, I guess he would be kind of an underworld, or, you know. And then, of course, there's a story of him stealing fire for mankind. That's similar to many other stories, though, too, isn't it? He had
like
that story in there,
Prometheus.
Too, about stealing fire for... humankind.
Yeah, it's like Prometheus in the Greek
stories. Yeah, he shares that too. It's very similar to the Prometheus story.
Yeah.
He steals fire from the sun and has to do some weird tests and all this weird stuff. So, yeah, they're pretty interesting. I have quite a few of those books, American Indian Folklore. Stuff gets pretty wild. I love it. Another thing I've gotten into a little bit recently is some of the Australian stuff. I just got the Ancient Aliens Australian book and Australian Shamanism. They have some weird stuff going down over there. It seems like a lot of people kind of look over Australia. I think it's just as wild as Egypt, some of the stuff they got going on there with some of the mythos and the star people and all that stuff. That, you know, the aboriginals and all that's very fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about it, but again, you know, like you said, that culture's, you know, been heavily repressed in a lot of ways, just like the Native American.
Yeah, and they're saying now that Australia is like the oldest point of civilization, possibly. I think they even said older than Africa. That just came out, some weird DNA study all over the internet.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like we have no idea about the past in a lot of ways. We're just clueless. I think that was another thing Gordon White was writing about in his Starships book, like trying to look back into the past, and it's just, it's, you know, it's difficult. It's really difficult to ascertain, like, what the hell, like, really happened. Because Plato talked about this, too. Like, mankind's been wiped out so many times that, and usually the only people that survive can't read or write, and there's no written records. So we're clueless a lot of times.
And one thing I was talking about, did you read Magicians of the Gods?
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? That was pretty. You know, I haven't read the whole thing, but I've read some of it. But I know.
Yeah, I gotta say, I felt like I don't know how other people felt, but I felt like the comet part of the book was like so much stronger than the Göbekli Tepe part of the book that I felt like they should have been almost like two different books, because I felt like the Göbekli Tepe stuff was just not that strong and not that convincing to me personally. But I felt like the comet stuff was really interesting, and he had a lot of like really interesting original like research that I'd never seen before that I thought was like the strongest part of the book myself.
And there was just this Andrew Collins book that came out about Atlantis and some comet. I look at all that stuff and I'm like, we're about to die probably. It's going to happen again. And why hasn't it happened again? Or maybe, you know, like you said, it's probably happened before. I've had Nancy Red Star on before, and she has those Star Ancestor books and stuff. And she talked about on certain continents, I forget which ones, but we were wiped out, or whoever lived there was wiped out. And, well, some of them were taken by the star people to other continents as that whatever destroyed, but there were some weird Native American stories about that kind of stuff, to where the star people came and saved them because some crazy ecological thing was happening. Another thing I've noticed a lot lately, a lot of people talk smack about Planet X, and I used to laugh about it and stuff, but there's like some weird stuff lately. A lot of it's crazy, but some stuff out there, like, you know, this NASA finding Roman planets and stealth planets and all that makes you wonder, you know, if some of it's true. But, I mean, who knows? But then you have the comet stories of some kind of, you know, thing coming through and killing us regardless, which that could be a comet, could be a Planet X for all you. It could be a planet, a roaming planet. So I kind of look at that stuff a little bit different. But some of it's crazy. Like, there's some people that put these pictures up and claim it's it, and it's just like an orb from their camera messing up or something. It's in the sky right now, and then it's really just some kind of photo problem with their camera.
Yeah, you know what? One of the things I often like to think about a lot is, and this is a little bit of a digression from what you're talking about, but how much do you think we could know if we cut out all of the stuff that you have to get from other people, like in books or the internet, videos, like anything that you can't like actually know yourself is true, and you cut out all the rest of the stuff, like how much smaller is your world?
A lot, definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
Like, how much do we really, really know that we can actually see or prove ourselves? It's surprisingly little.
We're just bombarded by constant information. One of those American Indian Star People stories, the aliens were taking these women and saying they're going to colonize another planet because men are too violent and we're de-evolving, and they were just going to start over with women and teach them how to, I guess, make test tube alien babies without men. And that was the whole story, that basically we're about to be toast and die, and the women are going to recolonize a planet. Wow. But I mean, the plates have shifted. We don't even know how many times. Why haven't the plates shifted again? I mean, that could very well happen easily. And that could be, you know, some gruesome stuff going on if that ever happens again. No doubt about it. But
yeah, there's no doubt the Earth is a violent place. I mean, and I don't mean like people necessarily. I mean, certainly people are violent, certainly. But the Earth itself is, in a natural sense, is violent. The sea, you know, you have all sorts of things, earthquakes, like you're talking about the plate shifting. I mean, you know, generally it's very, you know, sedate and calm, but, you know, at times it's calamitous and there's no way to survive it in a physical sense.
And I wonder if in our lifetime something big is going to happen like that, the plate shifting, or, you know, the way they drain the earth dry of oil and all that stuff's got to be affecting it on somehow, I would think, for sure, that would make that worse, you know, on some level.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's no way we can know for sure, but we can know that, you know, each one of us should be prepared for those moments because we don't know when they're going to happen. But what you do know is if it does, you're not going to have time to get everything in order. You're not going to have time to, you know, get yourself right with, you know, your creator, however you want to call it. So it's worth it to spend the time doing that right now. That's what I think.
What state are you in?
I'm in Massachusetts.
Okay, I couldn't remember. For some reason, I was thinking California because I was thinking about all the weird California stuff going on right now with the earthquakes. There's like a lot of weirdness going on with that right now. Big time. There was like a lot of 200 quakes in the Salton Sea, and they're saying that possibly there's about to be a big one in San Andreas fault.
Mm-hmm.
But they just had that on all over Facebook, those articles on their little news feed promoting it. It was pretty creepy. No doubt about it. Oh, I see Neil Gaiman's coming out with Norse mythology book in February. He's supposed to be rewriting them. I like Neil Gaiman. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, how that's going to work out, really. How do you rewrite those? And is it going to be like comedy? Or I'm sure there'll be some comedy in it, but he's completely rewriting the Norse mythology. That should be a little weird.
That's quite a project. I can't even imagine.
That comes out in February next year. I already got that pre-ordered. Along with my Maynard from Tool biography. I just saw that's coming out in November. What is that called? Let me look it up. They're supposed to be finally coming out with a new album. Thank the universe. It's been like forever.
Yeah, how many years has it been?
10 at least. They're caught up in some weird lawsuit and couldn't do anything. I read an article about it, but I can't remember what the lawsuit was about. Something to do with, I don't remember, but they were caught up in a lawsuit and couldn't make an album for some weird reason, so they went on to do Perfect Circle and Pussifer. Find the name of that new biography. It comes out in November. And then he went on and did the whole wine thing, you know, makes wine and all that stuff. But I think, they're working on a new album. It's coming out. I just don't know when. It may be this year or maybe next. The book is called A Perfect Union of Contrary Things, and it's by Maynard, and it's his biography. I just put that on pre-order. Looking forward to that. Pretty wild guy, for sure. Love his music, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
That's what I want to ask you. What kind of music are you into?
Yeah, I listen to a lot of different music. lately I've been listening to a lot more like classical music. So just generally trying to relax. So I tend to like want to listen to music while I'm reading or studying. So it's
like
easy
Mozart?
To like kind of put that in the background. Yeah, Beethoven or, you know, any of the great composers. But yeah, it's good stuff. So I like that. I don't know. I have varied tastes, so it depends. And a lot of it depends also, like, who's in the room with me. If my children are there or my wife's there and what they want to listen to. And so my music's not really my own anymore. You know how that goes.
Yeah. What's the Wagner Norse thing he wrote? What's that called? Sigmund or something?
Oh.
Some classical piece, and it's like...
Yeah, the name escapes me. I'm not really an expert on him.
I recently got a hold of that and was listening to it. It's like an opera. I was like, I just wanted classical music. I didn't know it was an opera, dude. Come on. I forget the name of it, too. The Ring, something
Der Ring
like that.
Des Nibelungen?
Yeah. Hitler loved it.
Yeah, I don't know really much about that.
I don't know a lot about it, too, but I know it's he did some classical weird opera kind of thing to it and everything. But my musical taste, I can go from Nine Inch Nails to Tool to Rob Zombie to R. Carlos Nike, I always say it wrong, the American Indian flute dude. I love that stuff, too. So listen to a lot of soundtracks. There's one I listen to, I don't know if you consider them a band, but it's called Wardruna, Wardruna, and they do a bunch of the Vikings music, and they have a few CDs out that are great. It's like this Norse chanting, weird, it's pretty
Yeah,
cool.
I heard one, they do this one tune, Warrior, with this Anila, I think her name is, singing.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I have two of their... There, I love it. That stuff's great to write to. It's awesome. And the Viking soundtracks, I know they did a lot on that. That song for Vikings is pretty interesting. Now, if I had a heart, now I'm forgetting who the freak, Fever Ray or something. That's a pretty interesting song. But none of our other songs, I've listened to them, they don't really sound like that song. But I like that song a lot, too. Listen to Nox Arcana. That's like weird. They have some weird Necronomicon, like horror, classical. I don't know what you would call it, but it's pretty interesting. They have a lot of weird music. It's kind of like horror classical.
I grew up listening to a lot of like heavy metal, like in the 80s. So that's one thing I definitely like. If I'm, you know, going retro and like thinking back, those are a lot of the music I like. It was like Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Dio, Scorpions. Yeah, even like a lot of Metallica, like early Metallica.
Went to the concert when I was younger, the mm-hmm. Black album.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved Ride the Lightning. That was like my ultimate favorite one.
Which one?
Ride the Lightning.
Yeah, that's good. They're putting out some new stuff now, and I'm pretty, it's pretty good. It's like they're mm-hmm. tapping into some of the old stuff. They have a new CD coming out. It's not out yet, but they've released a few songs from it, and it's actually pretty good. It surprised me. They're having a little comeback.
They're definitely hugely talented. I think, actually, Kirk Hammett, the guitarist, is having an art show at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts coming up, where he's got like a lot of his, I think it's like horror movie art on display. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of the music I listened to back in junior high, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Queensryche. I got into Manson and stuff. I went to his concert. That was pretty crazy in Atlanta. I went to Antichrist Superstar. That was insane. There were Christians outside boycotting.
Yeah,
it was pretty good. But I listen to his music sometimes now, but there's nothing that compares to that Antichrist Superstar album. That was definitely the most badass.
Mm-hmm.
he's never gotten that good again, but everybody gets old and fat, me especially. We got about 3 minutes, so Joe's giving us the countdown. Really enjoyed it, man. It was great. And I think on some level, though, I was kind of a D to Jay for the Trump thing. I think I kind of needed the solo with you on some level. It's been a little therapeutic. I think it was meant to be on some level.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Really enjoyed it. And what's your, give out your website again.
Sure. It's occultofpersonality.net. We also have the Facebook page at Occult of Personality, on Twitter. And we also have a membership section, occultpersonality.net/membership, with lots of extra exclusive interviews with all of the people on the show and a lot of great material for those looking to delve deeper. It's very reasonable. So sign up and support the podcast. Thank you.
Great, man. It's been an honor to have you here. I know I've shared your, the website information thingy and Malfi Talk, and people were excited. Greg. I was like, man, this dude, people know this dude.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm glad.
Right,
so, yeah.
Man, I've enjoyed it. Take care, buddy.
Reach out, and I'd love to hear from him. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
All right.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next Friday. And Ronnie Thomas, we're going to be talking about some crazy dude that kept his wife in a room and did Frankenstein experiments on her or something. Let me find that real quick before we go and just tell you what that's called. I believe Supernatural Substation's coming up next. That one's called Ronnie Thomas, No Place for the Living, The Mad Story of Carl von Kossel. And this dude, does weird stuff like Norman Bates with his dead wife, like Frankenstein stuff. So it's pretty interesting. So our Halloween show there, plus Nick Redfern coming up. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. Everybody have a good weekend. Good night.
This is Michael Angley of Michael Angley Live. This is Michael Angley of Michael Angley Live, Discovery Paranormal, and the Daily Update.